Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Because I will literally shave all my hair off if the Ravens finish with the one seed. We know you. We've got you. And you did say all of your hair, too, which means all of your hair, yeah. Not even just your head. Right? technically, that is what that means.
You're pushing it too far.
Whoa. What would Ahmed Fareed look like if he shaved his head? I don't know. I don't want to find out. I don't. He's here wearing his Michigan colors. He's an asshole. He's rubbing it in because my Longhorns didn't make it. What's up, everybody? It's Chris Sims Unbuttoned. We are here on Wednesday. It's the What the Fuck Happened podcast, a.k.a. Treasure Hunters. You see Morgan behind me. She's a little tired. She wanted to get some coffee today. So she's back there doing that on her phone. Typical millennial stuff. And then here we go. We're off. And running.
We're pretty close to millennials.
I know. I think we are millennials. She's probably not even. She's like something younger than that, which generation Z or X.
Millennial. She's a proud millennial.
Are we millennials? I'm not even sure either.
We're on the border.
Before millennial?
Gen X.
That's right. We grew up.
We're not baby boomers.
I think I look more Gen X.
I feel more Gen X.
Right? Because we were that. I remember that commercial vividly. And I feel like if you can remember the Pepsi Vivid, like the Pepsi Generation X commercials, then you were probably in that generation.
I think our personalities are more Gen X.
It's a
weird generation because no one ever talks about Gen X, really.
We've been forgotten.
It's like boomers and millennials.
People are racist against Gen X. I'm suing the world. How dare they?
All right, so
how you feeling, asshole, in your Michigan colors? Okay?
That was a great game. I went over, watched it with my dad. My son was over there, too. Yeah. We were jumping up and down. I felt terrible because I was like, Michigan's dominating the game, and they're just winning by three.
Yeah, right.
And then second half, Alabama and Michigan could do nothing offensively, which was my big worry coming into the game.
Yep.
But for them to pull it out, and I was jumping up and down afterwards.
It was amazing.
It was one of the best football games I've ever watched with my family.
I hear that. It was definitely special. Like, even though it wasn't the most exciting, it was exciting, if that makes sense.
There were mistakes, for sure.
It was intense. It was a close-fought battle.
Yep.
You felt like, one mistake could sway it one way or the other, right? Two legendary coaches. Right, where you felt like, man, if one of them messes up managing the game here, they're going to lose the football game. That stadium, that setting, right? You know, that stadium's got a special place in my heart always, right, because my dad won his Super Bowl there. But to see that on TV with two powerhouses like that going at it, and then, like, literally, I mean, when they were down seven, I was in my living room with my wife and son, like, oh my gosh, this is a huge drive for Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Like, this is it.
And the Big Ten and, like, the history of Michigan.
Damn, it's 20-13.
Can they
do this, right? They're not used to playing from behind. And McCarthy clutch as hell. Awesome to see. Really was. So, congratulations. It was a lot of fun to watch that one.
And how were you watching the final play of Texas and Washington?
I was asleep. Okay. It was pitch black. That's how I was watching it. I was out. I don't know what happened. Like, really, that's first off, you know, college football and the NCAA, they are a top of the list of some of the, I would say, dumbest shit in all of American sports. They top the list in a lot of things, right? With their current status of the playoffs and how it's done.
It's a mess.
I mean, the most dominant American sports team in the last 3 years is Georgia. They didn't get a chance to even get in the playoff. That makes no sense, okay? So that's an issue. To play a game at 9 o'clock at night on New Year's night when everybody has school and work the next day, like, do they want to make money?
Yeah.
Because they all seem to want to pocket money for, like, oh, give me this cash and you can be a sponsor and do all that. But then when it comes to the enjoyment of everybody and making big money for commercials, you're going to just screw over half the country? I couldn't make it. It's 34-21. Texas was driving.
It looked over.
I had been up late from the night before on New Year's. We'll get into that. And I was kind of like exhausted, let alone I was like, man, they're down. And next thing I knew, I woke up because I was on the ESPN app at the time.
Yeah.
I woke up and it just said, like, ESPN, thanks for watching this program. And I was like, wow, I guess it's over. And I rolled over and I waited till the morning until I woke up to even look up the score.
You saw it, that it came down.
I was like, whoa. I was shocked by the headline because they were like, Washington barely survives. I think that's what it said. And I was like, what? The game got that close? Right? Cool to see. Longhorns fought, but came up short.
So
I felt like we were going to come up short.
Yes.
Watching the game, I felt like Washington was better. Not that we didn't have a chance, but I felt like Washington was better.
Yeah, offensively for Washington,
amazing.
It's going to be. And you've been talking about him for a long time.
Yeah.
I remember everyone before the year started, even, you said, well, look out for Penix because
he deserves to be right up there in that
Williams
combo.
Good. Yeah.
Right. Caleb's awesome. I got that. Drake May's awesome. Michael Penix Jr. needs to be right there with them. Michael, I mean, in the year where you always hear me say, don't just give it to the quarterback on the best team, we finally have a fucking team that's got a good team and the quarterback is the reason.
Undefeated.
And they give it to the Heisman to somebody else.
Yeah.
Who was deserving. I don't mean that. But of all the years where he did all these great records and they're undefeated and it's all about him throwing the ball every play and everybody knows he's going to do it and he throws for 430 yards every week. This is the year, forget the quarterback on the best team. We're not going to do it this year. Why? Because it's not sexy. It's not cool. He wasn't, a top recruit? I don't understand it.
Yeah.
That's where it just drives me crazy sometimes, sports media and all that.
Well, it's understandable. You couldn't make it to the end there and you were tired.
It would have been
awesome
if we had Michigan, Texas.
That would have been That would have been great.
I mean, this podcast would have been that much better.
We would have been kissing feet and making bets and all that. But now it sucks, as Pete says. But you were tired a late night there and you've got early mornings. And when you got home, the last time we were together was New Year's Eve night, and we got done with the pod at 11:50. We all stuck around. We popped a bottle of champagne.
We popped a bottle.
We took some swigs.
Yeah,
and then
we said happy
only
New
one
Year.
Swig,
yeah,
and then we drove
one
home.
I don't like champagne to drink more than a sip, really.
And then you were like, I got to go home because I got maybe 10 kids at home that are having a party. I'm just going to tell them, hey, it's okay. Night's done, guys.
If it was 10, I wouldn't have said anything. I would have said, you're fine. You can stay here.
Oh, okay.
Right? I knew I was in trouble because as I was walking out of the building, my wife was calling.
Oh, no.
And she was already stressed. And she was in the act of kicking people out at that point because the party had become too big, right? So, it went from, 10 to 15 to I think it got to around 11 o'clock and there was 50 people there, right? Okay. Right. And, you've been in our barn. Our barn's not made for 50 people.
Yeah.
Our whole house isn't made for 50 people. We got a 300-year-old, farmhouse, right? So that don't look right.
Yeah.
And it became, raucous for sure.
Oh no.
I mean, I have this huge Christmas tree in my barn. It's like 15 feet. Ruined. They ruined it. Oh. And I was pissed off because on New Year's I was like, I'm gonna sit in the barn and make a fire and kind of enjoy the last day or two with the tree and all that. Ruined the tree, broke the lights. Sounds like somebody tried to jump off the top of the barn. You know how the barn has like the second
rafters?
Level there?
Oh.
Right. And jumped onto the tree.
Oh, no.
Right. So the barn was a mess. There was only a few kids there when I got home. So that was not, I didn't
so
have
Danielle
to be.
Danielle had done the
Danielle
dirty work.
Danielle got them all out. She basically said, hey, this is crazy. You guys aren't acting appropriately. Charlotte's dad's on his way home, and he's going to go fucking crazy if he sees this here.
Yeah.
And she said that's when everybody departed.
Wow.
Right? So
were they like, when you got there?
There was
they
like literally like people like, they saw me pulling in the driveway, and they were like, there was like five people in the driveway, and they like got in the car and drove off, right? They were like, we're out of here. We're not going to meet Mr.
Gosh.
Sims right now. So did that. But yeah, I was revved up. It's New Year's. I'm revved up anyways from our show. I was expecting to go home to action anyways.
Yeah.
But then it became like, ah. Are you fucking kidding me? This is disgusting. The barn's, they ruined it. I can't watch it tomorrow. What they did to the tree. I didn't go to bed till past like, past 3 a.m.
So you don't have to get into all the details here if you don't want. This is your own family.
Okay.
But was it always, was this the plan from?
No. I believe.
Or did the people just start like heard like, Sims house is popping right now.
I heard, that's how it would happen. And I've gotten more and more stories as the days have gone by, right? But basically what my daughter's boyfriend told me yesterday, because he was like still apologizing. He's like, sorry, Mr. Sims, I should have took more control of the situation.
Yeah.
I was like, relax. His name's Rowan.
Okay.
Relax, Rowan. Don't worry. It's not
That's
on
good.
You.
Taking accountability. I like that.
But then my daughter, they chimed in. They were like, yeah, I mean, we had 10 to 15 people here. She's like, we invited like a few more She goes, but the problem was when they came, they brought people that we didn't even know were invited.
Yeah.
So this second group that came must have told a bunch of people, and that's where it went off the rails.
Oh, yeah. Boy. Well.
Welcome. You'll be there one day. It's coming soon.
I hope she enjoyed her last ever New Year's Eve party.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the last party she's having for a while. That's for sure. Especially the last one she's having when I'm not there for the full time.
You know what I'm glad about, though? Yeah. That she a lot of friends. You know, and that's good. You know, friends are what make the world go round, and that's good.
Not mad at that.
So a lot has happened here, including the way we started this podcast.
I can't believe you wore still blue and yellow.
I didn't even think about it, actually, when I wore it. No. And Morgan said,
are
you wearing your Michigan colors? Yeah. And I was like, I didn't think about that, but I am proud.
Whatever.
There's nothing against, you know, challenge burnt orange. It's still Hines. Said he will shave his hair, all of his hair, if the Ravens finish with the one seed. That's what he said in the preseason. When
get
Chris
real,
get,
he said to
get
me.
Get real, yeah.
And us.
Yeah.
Okay. You keeping it real, big guy.
Look at that.
I like it at still Hines.
He did it.
He did it. And, like, you should be proud of it. You got the perfect round-shaped head to be the bald-shaped head guy.
Well, that was part of it,
incredible.
Too.
Incredible.
Because Minnie Hulkin tweeted him.
Yeah.
And he goes, pretty sure you're the first person who was ever stuck by a bat on here. Massive respect. He wrote back to him.
Right.
And goes, I've had to do it once before, so I made the bet knowing at least I had a semi-normal shaped head.
Okay.
Which is a good
So it was a calculated
move.
Risk.
That's a good
I
move.
I like that. That's what I like. That's what a good defensive coordinator does in football. That's what you got to do. Calculated risk every
you
now
make
and
a
then.
Bet that you're willing to lose.
Right. You go, if I lose, I can live with this.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine.
Right?
I
didn't want to do it, but
right.
He's like, I can survive.
You know, like you're playing the Dolphins. You're like, you know, I'm going to double Tyreek all game long. If yeah. I lose, you know, to Robbie Chosen, then so be it. I gotta live with it. All right, you know. So you gotta make your choices every now and then. Good for him. Looking good, man. Really.
It's still Hines, a solid homie out there. Well done. All right. So what?
So
we're
wait.
Do-
well, one last thing too. There. Wait. Like, was there a shot at me? Like, pretty sure you're the first person who ever stuck by a bet on here. I mean, I know I didn't kiss my own butt, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But you haven't done that,
but I did kiss your feet.
You kissed my feet. Yeah,
I kissed your feet. Right?
I think it's, you know, on Twitter,
I can't kiss my own butt. I'm sorry. I'll try.
Like, it was hard for you to get out of this because I just threw my foot in your face. And you had to, what are you going to do?
And
right?
We talked about it, like, the whole year.
Did.
So we had to.
We did. But with him, it's just like, no one knows where he lives. It's like, what are we going to do? Like, right. Show up at his house and shave his head? No. But he had enough personal accountability and responsibility.
I like that.
To follow through with the bat.
You don't see that in these millennials
you
these days.
You don't. Those millennials and those boomers were the good ones. So this is what we're going to do with the pod.
Okay.
This is, yes, Treasure Hunters, you mentioned it, what the F happened. But we're kind of going to be forward-looking here because we have a lot of rematches here of games that have significance for the playoff picture that we've had before. So these are all rematches. And when we were going over the ideas with Pete and you on the text chain, you're like really? You go, really? We're really going to look back at a week one game with no significance.
I was like, you might as well ask me to watch last year's preseason games while we're at it.
So you didn't really go back and look at some of these games, but maybe there's some information that we can glean from what happened before and see if everything has changed here. So we'll go through all the rematches that have significance in the playoff picture here. We've got a lot of big butts to get to because we've been slacking on that. And Requiem for a Team.
Yeah.
Teams have been eliminated. We have to put them in the ground.
Yeah, damn.
They're dead.
You're going to have your work cut out today. Next week, you're going to have half the league to write Requiem for.
I know. Okay, we got a good amount of them, though,
yeah, I know.
After this one.
Yeah, we chipped away.
All right, so here we go. We're going through the most important games and the most important people in these games, too. We'll kind of take a look at the key figures in clinching playoffs or some of these. And the first one we talk about is our NBC Sunday Night Football, Bills at Dolphins, the final Sunday Night Football regular season game of the year. The winner of this game will clinch the AFC East. How crazy is that? The winner clinches the division.
Yep.
Buffalo can still get a wild card.
Yeah.
But it's also possible.
They might not be in.
They might not be in.
Right.
And some people think at this point they're playing like a top five team in the NFL. They might not even make the playoffs. And for the Dolphins, hugely significant because it's either hosting a significant number of games in the playoffs or like going on the road immediately and having to play
in a sixth seed.
Cold weather environments.
Yeah. Probably have to go to Kansas City the way it looks right now. I mean, if that's what happens, they're most likely going, because if they lose, they won't be able to be the five seed. Or they might be able to, actually. I'm wrong about that. They might. No, actually, I don't think they will, because Cleveland will still win the tiebreaker because of the better conference record. So Cleveland will be the five seed. So that means they will be the six, and then they have to go on the road to Kansas City, and play in the cold and play the team that we saw has answers to stop that high-octane offense already this year when they played over in Germany.
So they played week four. The Bills destroyed them 48-20 in that one. That was one of those where like, oh, the Bills are actually a pretty good team. Slowed down that Miami offense. You looked, though, specifically, you looked at the Dolphins against what they did against the Ravens, too.
Yeah,
you did a deep dive into this.
I watched what we saw this weekend, right? Who's watched Buffalo more than me? Do you not ask me to watch Buffalo every fucking week, pretty much,
yeah.
I feel like?
We think you like it. So,
yeah, well, I do like it. I do. So I did not go back to the week four matchup, but I have a great feel for Buffalo, their defense, and what they do and how they game plan.
So let's go with the Dolphins defense first here, because they did score the Bills 48 points on the Dolphins defense, and that was before some of their key injuries.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly
right.
how many people will be available for
right.
them. Xavier Howard, will he be back? I don't know. Jalen Waddle,
doesn't
will he
sound
be back?
Good. I know. They need him, right?
Tyreek Hill, will he be 100%?
Yeah.
He has been playing. But the Dolphins D, was that Ravens game an anomaly for them, or is it a sign of real problems to come here? Because I think we have a graphic of how good the Dolphins defense has been weeks 8 through 16. It was like 254 yards a game. So up until last week, they were one of the best defensive units in the league. Last week, it was almost 500 yards allowed. Ravens just torched them. So, with your deep dive, what have you seen from the Dolphins, and are they going to have trouble stopping teams from here on out?
Game got out of hand, right? Baltimore made some incredible plays, right, to where, again, Baltimore controlled the game. But it also, they made some incredible plays where you went, ooh, if that goes a different way, the 4th and 7 at the middle of the field, right, where Isaiah likely catches it one hand and runs it. Like, if they don't get that, the game's going to be a little different. It's not, like the Ravens are going to have the ball at midfield before the half. It's 21-13, right? So there were some moments in the game where, Baltimore won, and credit to them. And of course, I'm not taking any credit away from them, but like in the NFL, 56-19, it happens because of like 3 or 4 plays, right? It's not like is maybe sometimes as physical dominance what you think. Either way, they still were physically dominant. They were. I think Miami defense is very good. I like it. You know that. It's well coached. Concerned about the pass rush issues now, right? Now you're down to like Van Ginkel as being the only guy that you feel like can really get pressure off the edge. He's a very good player. But at the same time, defense is good. How good? I've been up in the air about it. I've kind of talked highly about it, right? I think the thing you could question is just like, did they play any great offenses here during that stretch of really good defense that we talked about? Mm. The Cowboys being the best one of the group, and the Cowboys being a team that's a little one-dimensional and don't run the ball all that well, so they could go, hey, let's play pass defense. But either way, they had problems in that game on pass defense, right? The thing that they really got killed in this football game, they were worried about the Ravens' run game, right, and all the answers they have, the QB runs, all of that stuff, and they played more man than they have in most games. And I think that was the reason why, because they were worried about the Ravens' run game. They wanted to get one more guy in there to stop the run, or one more guy to keep eyes on Lamar Jackson if they drop back to pass to kind of spy him and not let him run crazy, right? They messed up coverages throughout the football game, right? Whether it was Zay Flowers uncovered down the sidelines, I don't know if that is, the linebacker's fault or if that was Eli Apple's fault. I think it was Eli Apple's fault. I think it was just regular 3 buzz, and he should have stayed in his third. But either way, that was a mess up. There was a touchdown. There was, a touchdown, what was it, to make it, I want to say the next touchdown pass to start the third quarter, man-to-man coverage. They kind of messed up how they played the bunch set. You saw the wheel routes early on in the football game, right, with the running back. One got called for offensive pass interference. The next one was a touchdown. They didn't play that right because they were playing man coverage there. We saw Xavier Howard get beat on a slant and go to start the game in man coverage. They didn't make the plays mano-a-mano. OBJ, man-to-man down the sideline, makes the play over the guy, gets the feet down, right? There was a ton of that where it's just like, the intensity, the big play moments, whatever, was all on the Ravens' side, definitely. So the thing you come away with, and sometimes it's hard to see, and I'm faulting myself here too, because yesterday I had one of those days where I watched them on defense, I watched the Ravens on defense, and then I went down the line and watched some other teams on defense too, and you come away, and it was one of those where I went, Miami's defense definitely doesn't move like some of these defense. I'm watching the Ravens defense. Oh, I'm watching the 49ers defense right now. They don't move like this. As good as I think they are, it was a little reminder to watch them next to these other teams to go, yeah, they're not on their level yet. Hmm. They're good. They're on the right path. They're still. I still think they're learning and trying to figure out some of Vic Fangio's rules, and that's why they're messing up some of these passing off of receivers. It was a thing consistently throughout the day. Literally the first play of the game, Jalen Ramsey's yelling at Javon Holland, and they're having an argument on who should have taken who and passing him off. So they had a problem with that. Yeah, their physicality and the way they fly around the field is not the same as Ravens, Niners, yeah, you know, Cleveland Browns, right? Some of those defenses where, you know, I look at that and just go, oh, my gosh, they're flying around and killing people.
Yeah.
I think that was another thing that kind of maybe hit me in the face as I was watching that football game.
So we mentioned that we asked the homies who the people of the game will be, who the most important players or coaches.
I got an answer to that.
The boy B says, easy answer for him. He goes, Joe Brady. We've seen the Bills offense look a little different under him, but he's got to come up with a game plan, specific plays to expose this Dolphins defense, who is missing several key contributors. You mentioned man-to-man.
Yeah.
And
you see that
Miami
in the
Dolphins.
Notes, right?
Yes. Are they going to be able to do that against the Buffalo Bills? Is Joe Brady going to have to scheme up some stuff in the passing game to get guys open?
So that's where, you know, like, yeah, they struggled in man-to-man in this game, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't like I was like, oh, mano-a-mano, they can't cover these guys. Uh-oh, right? Now, I mean, we know they pose problems with Baltimore, and they got speed. But I wasn't just like, oh, my gosh, they have no chance here, right? No, Miami's got some good cover guys. We know that, especially if Xavier Howard's healthy. That's the thing I came away with. One, like, Buffalo's offense is not as creative as Baltimore's. Two, you know, they can't run the ball like Baltimore can, traditional-wise, right? Now, they're getting better, and I'll get into that in a second. And then three, of course you don't think – I don't think they have the weapons that Baltimore has at wide receiver. I mean, Baltimore's got three receivers with multiple rockets up their ass, you know. And Buffalo, I'd go, I don't know if anybody's got more – you know, they got Stephon Diggs, and even his rockets aren't, you know – multiple. It's just like, hey, he runs good. But it's not like, again, I tell everybody when they go, well, what about Stephon Diggs? I go, when's the last time you saw Stephon Diggs just run by somebody for an 80-yard bomb? When's the last time you saw him catch a slant and then go, zoom, oh my gosh, there goes Stephon Diggs for 70 yards? It never. Like, it in years. So that's where people got to back off that. My point being, with all that said, Miami's going to be able to cover Buffalo. Mm. They will. And that will be something to watch for. Can Buffalo separate? And as you know, I mean, and we'll hit on it in a second, Buffalo couldn't separate from New England at all last week. Now, New England's awesome on defense, and they do a lot of stuff, but they couldn't separate from them at all.
I thought this was good in your notes, too, transitioning to the Bills' offense, is that they're almost in the same world as the Chiefs right now in some respects.
Right.
You think, like, you've said this about the Chiefs, they need to embrace the ugly. You know, it's not just that high-flying Patrick Mahomes throw it all around the field.
Right.
Like, Josh Allen's one of the best quarterbacks in the game right now of all time, most talented. But you feel like, does this Bills offense, they also need to embrace the ugly?
I do. I think so. You know, they're another one where I go, stick with your shotgun, pulling guards, pulling tackles, fake the read option, give it to the running back. He follows the guard, you know, comes from another way. It looks like he's going to go out the back door, but then he comes back and follows the pulling tackle. Oh, Josh Allen keeps it off of it. Oh, Josh Allen play action, and we still pull the tackle. Boom. That, to me, is when they're at their best right now, right? When they get into some of the moments they did the other day where it was like, oh, no, yeah, we can't do what we want to do. Oh, we're having a little problem today. And all of a sudden, it's like, let's go default mode. Default mode, like on the Xbox controller. Let's go to it. Just shotgun Josh Allen. Let him fucking pull off magic. They're not good enough to do that. They don't have the weapons outside. Even when he pulls off magic, you're like, well, still nobody's separating. He's been holding the ball for 9 seconds. Still nobody's open, right? So to me, that was when they are at their best, is when they almost have like a Ravens, last year's Eagles type of attack, and they have some of those plays with it that I go, that's what you should ride home here. You do that, you know, play that style. Allen will make a few plays, and it's going to add to some people being open downfield, and you're going to start to get coverages where Josh Allen's going to go, oh, my gosh, nobody's played this coverage against me since my rookie year. And here they are on a 3rd and 5 or, you know, a 2nd and 6. And I'm getting looks that I've seen other quarterbacks get the last few years that I've been jealous of. right? But they can't quite stay patient enough there and bang it home to where they can quite get that. And I think if they want to make it through the AFC playoffs, they got to do that. They got to embrace the ugly. The D's playing good.
Mark Cooper says Josh Allen cannot afford any mistakes, even with their more balanced offense right now. I would say no quarterback, really, at this time of year and against this kind of competition can afford many mistakes.
No.
Not Bucky Cox, says his most important people.
Yeah.
Mike McDaniel and Sean McDermott.
Okay.
Seems like the Dolphins' offense is a little more elementary with the recent injuries.
Yeah.
Has Sean figured out a defense to drop his players into the right zones
right.
at the right times, or has McDaniel found a new angle of attack?
Right. Yeah, that's a good one. I'm more along the lines of that, okay? Like, you know, I'm partaking in this exercise too, and I think if you ask me, like, when we kind of wrote down the rundown, like, most important people for
yep.
this matchup,
yep.
right? I went with Dolphins stuff here. I went with the Dolphins O-line or McDaniel's patience in the run game. Now, I don't mean to be that guy, but why I say that is this. Well, one, you know, they do have a good rushing attack. And a rushing attack that even last week's stats will tell you, they don't run the ball enough. When all your running backs are averaging 7 yards per carry, you should throw them the ball more, right? Like if they were gashing with Tyreek all game long, right? What do they keep doing? They keep feeding Tyreek. But for some reason with the run game, they can't keep feeding that. And I don't understand it. And that will definitely help some of their problems right now, right? Where, you know, we saw some early success of them running the ball. And I think the game became a little bit more of like, whoa, Baltimore's scoring on us. And they kind of lost track of running the football. We're like, oh, we got to score points, so we got to throw the ball every play. And I want to be like, no, when you run the ball, I just saw Achan run down the sideline for 50 yards. You haven't thrown a ball that far yet, but yet the run wasn't good enough? Oh, here's another run for 20. You still haven't thrown a ball that far yet, but that's not good enough? Why? So that's where I said they got to be patient. And this the Dolphins O-line is not a great pass-protecting O-line. They're not. And they will get steamrolled or collapsed like Tua did in some situations last week against this group if they go too pass happy, let alone where they're letting people off the hook. And where I'm saying this, when I go into the Eagles loss, the Titans loss that we broke down a few weeks ago, right? Last week against the Ravens, the Bills the first time. It's always the same thing. Teams play defense and they go, we're just going to stop the pass. We don't think you'll be patient enough for the run. We're worried about stopping all these creative things you do in the pass game, right? And we think our front will be enough just to handle the run. And I don't think Miami's doing their due justice in calling people out when they do that, right? That's my thing, right? When we broke down the Titans game a few weeks ago, I want to go, they're playing Tampa 2 and cheating this and doing this the whole game. Run the ball. Throw a 5-yard out route. Do this. I know we're all fixated on all these cool things that we drew up all week, but sometimes the game's simple and just make it simple. And the answers kind of reveal itself for you, and I feel like they lose their way on that at times.
And I don't know what's easier to do as an offensive line that has had a lot of movement and injuries. I was looking at the numbers and the different starting offensive lines
right.
that the Miami Dolphins have had. They've had 10 different combinations of starting
been beat
offensive
up,
lines.
Right.
The Buffalo Bills,
yeah,
just the same five.
Same five.
All year.
Right.
One of three teams to just have the same five. And so that's a bit. And who knows? And maybe there are things that Mike McDaniel thinks he can't do with some of the combinations of the offensive line that he has out there.
I mean, you know, they don't have to be like, you know, run the ball every play. But they should not go through a drive or 6 to 7 plays without running the football. To me, that's where they fall into trouble. To me, that is where these defenses call their bluff, like I'm saying, and they're playing so hard to stop the other stuff. Because, of course, it's dangerous, but they right. also don't believe Miami will hang in there with the run either. And what they're doing is they're allowing people to, you know, play the areas like we talk about right now. Again, you take away, like you saw last week, all of a sudden they can't throw screens outside to the receivers. And then after the first two drives, they couldn't throw down the middle. And all of a sudden it's like, well, what else is there? What else? Tell me. They don't throw the ball outside the numbers. They throw an occasional go route. Everything is right here and here and here and here. And then the screen on the outside. Defenses have figured it out. They play defenses to kind of defend those areas. Stop the screens. Stop the throws in the middle of the field. Okay? They don't really throw deep outs or comebacks or anything like that. So let's just do that. So they're not going to start throwing out routes and deep comebacks. So the thing I would say is run the ball to then open up some of the things that they'll give you, the screens on the outside and the pop slants and all the things I talk about.
That was one of the things in week four, too. The Bills' defense did a pretty good job of controlling the middle of the field. And I think it was Tyreek. I saw the number somewhere. Tyreek and Waddle had like 104 receiving yards, the fewest in a game where they both played together. And so they did control that. The Bills did in week four.
It's usually what you see from everybody. It is. I mean, again, I'll go back to the Tennessee game. Same type of thing. You know, this game was the same thing. Early on, they hit it. But once Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen saw it a few times, see you later. Guess what happened? Oh, you went to the well too many times. Oh, Roquan Smith, interception, going down the sideline. The third interception, I think it was the third one, or did he just throw it to two? The second interception, guess where it was? Down the middle. There were seven guys there. You know, he tried to loft it over three guys and drop it underneath another three guys, and he threw it over his head, and the safety intercepted it, right? So it was just, it's too difficult, but they were playing for it. And that to me is like, yeah, they're not going to totally change on offense, but what they can change is just, again, when you rush the ball for 154 yards and you're averaging over 7 yards per carry with your running backs, you didn't run the ball enough. Mm. That's what that tells you. That, to me, is where you drop the ball in the game. And that, to me, is where they could drop the ball in the game if they don't stay with it in this one.
This is not the picks pod. You're not making your pick.
No. This one's I'm not sure where I'm going here yet.
Well, yeah, what's your feeling right now? What's your lean?
My feeling is Buffalo. My feeling is Buffalo because I think Buffalo is a more tougher physical football team who, you know, unlike most teams that play Miami, they've seen this offense, they know it, so they know kind of how to control it, gauge it, keep it under wraps to a degree, right? I think it's going to be a close football game regardless, though. I think it'll be more of a defensive type of football game than an offensive explosion. I think it's going to be more along the lines of like almost Dolphins-Cowboys a few weeks ago, where it'll be come down to a late field goal, something like that, 23-20, 24-21, 2017, right in that range. But that's what I would expect. It's one, Buffalo's offense doesn't have enough, so Miami will be okay there. And then the other side of the story will be, hey, Buffalo's defense knows how to defend this offense. And this offense right now, like I said, you play, you toss, crack, screen, slant over the middle, you're stopping like 80% of their offense. Mm. And Buffalo knows how to do that.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
My cat Rachel is the silliest cat I know. One time, she played inside a paper bag for 3 hours. What a mystery. But I'm glad her health isn't. Thanks to the color-changing litter from Fresh Step Crystals Health Monitoring Litter. This premium color-changing litter has pH-activated crystals that can help me detect potential illness early. That makes it easy for me to stay on top of her health and well-being. I may not understand all of Rachel's silly quirks, but I can keep up with the important things. Find Fresh Step Crystals Health Monitoring Litter at a store near you. Fresh Step is a registered trademark of the Clorox Pet Products Company.
30 million people will watch on Sunday Night Football. We'll do the halftime show. We'll give our analysis on that one.
You know what I want to say? One more thing about the Ravens?
I was going to give you a chance for a Columbo on this one.
One more thing just to say about the Ravens.
Oh, wait. Hold on. But we got – oh, yeah, we won't talk about the Ravens.
Well, they're playing the Steelers. I mean, the Ravens aren't going to be playing anybody. I don't know if there's a deep
– oh, we are talking about the Ravens
coming
up.
Yeah, we are. Right.
Yeah, would it be a host? You want to save it for the Ravens?
All right. Well, just one thing off of that game.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. Because, like, Lamar's, like, not going to play a full game here, right?
That's true.
And we're going to see guys in and out. The way the Lamar is throwing the ball, the aggressiveness of the offense, the talent at wide receiver, right? the fact that they can run the ball, and you have to respect that a little bit, I mean, they're hard to match up against, right? They're hard. So Miami, they're worried about the run game and being bludgeoned, but they want to play man-to-man across the board because, hey, we want somebody on Lamar, and we want to, you know, want to let them have windows and all that. But, like, there he is one-on-one with, like I said, multiple guys with rockets up their ass, and he's got all day. He's patting the ball and doing all that. Like, it and the way he's throwing and seeing the field, I mean, whew, it's going to take a special defense to slow down the Ravens the way they're playing right now.
All right. That's a little bonus nugget. We'll get to that. So that is Bills Dolphins. Watch it on NBC. Texans and Colts, the winner of this game, clinches a playoff berth. And they would clinch the AFC South if the Jacksonville Jaguars lose. How crazy is that? I never would have thought this division would come down to the final week. I just did not think that was even possible.
Especially, I mean, the Jaguars were 8-3 at one point.
Yeah. Week number two, the Colts won 31-20. I think Richardson got hurt in that game because Gardner Minshew came in. It was 31-10 in the third quarter. So really the Colts handled the Houston Texans.
Yes.
The Texans got some numbers late. C.J. Stroud, I think, still threw for over 300 yards in that game. It's part of the coming out party. Nigel Bryant says, the in-division matchup between Shane Steichen and DeMeco Ryans should be epic. C.J. Stroud versus the improved Colts defense should be interesting, but two Coach of the Year candidates battling it out for a potential home game in the playoffs should be a classic.
Yeah. You know, different teams than what they were then, right? Houston was, like, still finding itself then.
Mm-hmm.
Still learning a system. A lot of young guys. You know, C.J. Stroud, like you said, yeah, I mean, it was still early on in his development. It was shaky early. They don't run the ball. Or they run the ball at a way different level now compared to where they were early on in the football year. I mean, Texans have come along. So that's where it's different altogether, all right? So I think the Texans are a different football team. Colts have gotten better, too. Don't get me wrong.
Jonathan Taylor's back.
Exactly right. Their running game is real and difficult to handle, right? Minshew is – he can pick you apart. You play zone and do all that. He can. You know my thing. Again, with them is, yeah, you can pick them apart and do all that. But teams are playing him for that. That's why we see, like, Alec Pierce wide open running down the middle of the field, because teams so overplay, they don't throw enough down the field, as you've heard me say, right? So that's a big thing. But, like, if we get into just the conversation right off the bat of, like, who to watch for or who's the guys that are most important to me, right? And I'm trying to pick, sometimes some outside-the-box ones here. To me is this. It's the middle linebackers for the Indianapolis Colts. Mm. They're the ones that I look at to go, they got their hands full. I mean, listen, we know the D-line's got to play good, and they need to get pressure on the quarterback, and they do that anyways. They got a good D-line. They get after it that way. But where I go with the linebackers of the Indianapolis Colts, like E.J. Speed, Zaire Franklin, who are really good players and physical, but they got their work cut out for them here. Because unlike in that Week 2 matchup where they couldn't run the ball and it was a rookie quarterback, We know they found the groove. They were awesome at play action pass before they were even good at running the football. Now they're running the football to go along with that great play action pass. That, to me, they're the ones that are going to have to be all over certain keys as far as the O-line, what they do. You know, how does it look? Does it look more like a run set, a pass set? They're going to have to be really coached up in that department, because their ability to come downhill, stop Singletary, and Pierce, right? And then go, oh, no, they didn't give it to him. Now I got to get back because they're throwing a ball behind me because they're trying to move me with the play action pass. That is going to be a key to the football game. It's just how well they play, not only in the run game, but not being too over aggressive to always take the cheese on some of these fakes and leave the middle of the field wide open. Because once Houston gets you going in that direction, they make linebackers look silly and you know, look like their heads are spinning. And I look at those two, they're going to have big games if they want to try to win this one.
It is weird. I'm looking at the numbers from the Week 2 game, and Pierce ran the ball like 15 times for 30 yards, so they held him in check to 2 yards per carry. Last week against the Tennessee Titans, Pierce ran it 8 times for 16 yards, but the difference was that Devin Singletary ran it 18 or 16 times for 80 yards.
Yeah,
and so they're
running
another
the ball
weapon
now. Right.
There in the running game. This is Kevin Mulcahy says, Sheldon Rankins, Will Anderson, and Jonathan Greenard, his players to watch. They have to seal the edge and win at the line of scrimmage to slow the Colts' run game.
He's not wrong there either, right? You know, that's where I tried to go the linebackers there, but and try to give a different look. But, I mean, Indianapolis, when you talk about their team and their offense, it definitely starts with their run game and what they do there. So, yeah, their front is going to have their hands full there. And it's not a, you know, they're not a big front in Houston. They're a speed, cross chaos, right? Their linebackers will be really important as well. It will. But, you know, being able to stop Jonathan Taylor and that powerful offensive line is certainly going to be a big part of it.
If the Houston Texans win this game, it could decide the rookie of the year, the offensive rookie of the year at least. DraftKings Sportsbook has the rookie of the year odds. And as we sit here right now, C.J. Stroud is the overwhelming favorite on the offensive side, minus 1,200. Then you got Puka Nacua. Plus 450. I think there's some good value there with Puka Nacua.
Definitely is.
Because I was looking at the last two winners have been wide receivers, Jamar Chase and Garrett Wilson. It's not like it just goes to it. It's not like the MVP.
No.
Where it automatically goes to the best performing quarterback.
Right.
So we'll get to the defensive side here in just a second. But just first on the offensive side, because Puka could break two NFL rookie records this week. Needs four catches to break Jalen Waddle's record in 2021. Needs 29 yards to take down Bill Grohman from 1960 with the Houston Oilers, his rookie record.
Well,
never thought that would fall.
I think CJ's going to win it. I think what hurts Puka, is he going to play this week?
Mm.
I mean, that's the big thing. I mean, this to me, if the Rams, I would be shocked. Mm. This is Sean McVay, who usually plays nobody in the preseason.
Yeah,
I would think they play nobody. Puka Nacua is their best receiver. He has surpassed Cooper Kupp. Now, Cooper Kupp, I know, might not be 100% healthy, but he's their go-to guy right now. I would think we're not going to see him. I wouldn't. I mean, if I were the Rams, Puka Nacua and Kyron Williams and Cooper Kupp and Matthew Stafford would never see any red and gold near them the whole game. I wouldn't do it. So I think that hurts Puka's chances, let alone this is a special year we've seen from C.J. Stroud. I was, you know, wasn't sure how the injury would affect him and he missing two games and all that. But, I mean, there was a period in time where we were talking about MVP of football, C.J. Stroud. I think that kind of says it all. I think this is one year that, yeah, he pulls it off unless Puka plays and does something absolutely extraordinary this weekend, which I don't expect.
He might play just to get the yardage, but he did have a hip injury last week. Still played despite that.
Yeah, right.
But maybe he hasn't been 100% either. On the defensive side,
Jalen
Carter is the favorite, minus 330. Will Anderson, the second choice. And I was looking at Will Anderson. He had like six pressures last week. And I was like, that's pretty good. And then I looked at it. I was like, he had 12 snaps because they limited him because it was his first game back in a couple weeks.
Right.
He's the second choice. And Kobe Turner, who had a huge week last week, is plus 700.
Yeah. I think with the defensive side, like Will Anderson is, I think, very close to Jalen Carter. I like Jalen Carter had the strong start, right? I haven't watched Eagles film as of late, and we've broken them down a few times here to go, like, he's popping quite to the same extent, right? So it's not the same. Now, he was a little banged up, too, and hurt and dealing with some things, and he's had to play more, and I think they put more on his plate schematically. I think they've been asking him to two-gap a little bit more than maybe he should be, honestly, right? This one's a close one. It really is. Jalen Carter is, as you heard me say during the year, already in the conversation for one of the best defensive tackles in football. That's how good he is, right? Will Anderson's been phenomenal and made a lot of big plays. I think I'd still go with Jalen Carter, but like I think the race should be closer than what the odds say right here is what I'm saying. I wouldn't be mad if Will Anderson won it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I definitely would not. His effect goes more than just the sacks. Right, you said the pressures. He's awesome in the run game, you know. So he's been really, really damn good. Now the guy across from him, Jonathan Greenard's their best defense end on their football team, right? And he would be the guy. Sometimes I think that takes a little luster away from a Will Anderson because you go, oh yeah, he's great, but he's the second best pass rusher on the team. The other guy's the best one. Will Anderson's been great as a rookie.
Pete does note here, going back to the Rams discussion.
Yeah.
On the Rams show yesterday, McVay
noted
there is a difference between the 6 and 7 seed. They'll do everything they can to win, but the most important thing is being ready for the postseason.
Yeah, what kills them is that, they lost the game to Green Bay. So if Green Bay wins, they lose that tiebreaker. And if, you know, the Rams lose and don't play anybody, then they go to the 7 seed, right? Where, okay, you know, Dallas, Detroit, I don't know who they feel more comfortable matching up with there, right? So that'll be interesting to kind of see what they do. But to me, still the bottom, the baseline would be to me is to make sure we're healthy. We're not an incredibly deep team anyways. So who cares about 6 or 7 seed? Just make sure you're ready to go for the wild card game.
Yeah, Pete notes that America wants Stafford to go back to Detroit, take on my Detroit Lions. I do not want to see that. I don't want to have to see one of those fine young people lose. My Lions or Matt Stafford.
Yeah, but would you be more nervous with like Matt Stafford and the Lions coming to, Rams coming to town, or like, you know, Jordan Love and the Packers who have owned you guys forever?
I mean, that is true. It's like the Packers, last time we saw them in Detroit, they crushed them on Thanksgiving.
Right.
I don't know. Lions can lose any game they play, but they can also win a lot of the games too. Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5, pocket $150 in bonus bets instantly.
Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day.
You can download the app and use the promo code UNBUTTONED when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook,
the crown is yours.
All right, so now we go to the Jaguars and Titans. The Jaguars can clinch the division, the AFC South, with a win. They can still clinch a wild card if Pittsburgh loses, which they might not do because they're taking on the Ravens. I don't think the Ravens are going to play anybody.
Right.
And they need a Denver loss there. But they better just win. They just take care of business at the Titans here. The last time we saw these teams on the field together, it was in Jacksonville, and the Jaguars took care of business. They won 34-14. Tennessee was pretty much dominated all game. They only had one drive. I looked through the possession chart. They only had one drive of more than 5 plays to the Titans, so it was the defense for the Jaguars that came through in that one. I would expect, I don't know what the line is right now, Jaguars should be a heavy favorite, but this has been one of the more disappointing teams this year so far, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's kind of fallen apart. They've fallen apart ever since their bye week, ever since the 49ers kind of put it on them. Seems like things kind of went downhill after that. The Tennessee offense is not good. We know that. They struggle. I don't care who it is at quarterback. I mean, and we know all the reasons for that, right? I mean, that's well documented. Yeah, it's, you know, young quarterback. Their offensive line been banged up. They haven't been able to run the ball quite as good as they have in years past, right? There's nobody to be scared of at receiver. So that really leads some issues there. To me, like, when I kind of look at the game and break it down, I think the thing I look at here, you know, hey, yeah, do I think Tennessee can maybe throw the ball a little bit on Jacksonville? Definitely. I mean, Jacksonville's pass defense stinks. I don't know if they're going to be able to run the ball, all right? Can I see them making this game uncomfortably close and pulling off an upset? Yeah, I can. Mm. Because I think there's a chance, too, and this is when the Titans become dangerous, in my opinion, and we kind of hit on this a little bit already, and where if you ask me, like, what's the thing to watch for, player to watch for, okay, I would just go with the Jaguars O-line in this one, because if this becomes we have to throw the ball every play against the Tennessee Titans, and we don't feel like we can run the ball, Tennessee's going to hang in there. This offense is not creative enough to just beat a team like the Tennessee Titans and Vrabel and how well-coached they are on the defensive side of the ball, just the passing game, right? That going back to, again, the Dolphins versus the Titans. Mm-hmm. What did they do? They basically just said, we don't think they'll run the ball enough. We're willing to give up a few runs every now and then, and we don't think we'll just get killed by that because our D-line is really good anyway, so we're willing to kind of let them be on an island by themselves without putting too many people in to stop the run, right? And that's when they're most dangerous. That's when they can pull off the upset, is when they start to go, oh, this team, they don't want to run it. They're just going to throw it every play. And now they have all these crazy combination zones and coverages they play, and all of a sudden you're going, damn, nobody's open, right? And that's when problems start. So they have to be able to have a little balance against the Tennessee Titans. They have to. Their O-line doesn't protect well enough, right? So if they begin throwing the ball every time too, it's going to be – you're going to be strip sack fumble type of stuff too, to where that's how you get upset. And that's what would scare me because, you know, again, Tennessee can rush the passer too. So that's where I went with the Jags O-line there, just to go, they got to play, you know, better than what they've been playing, and at least they got the run game started last week when the Panthers. That, to me, will be a big part of this one.
Yeah, they ran for 155 yards last week against Carolina. Pretty good defense in Carolina.
Yeah.
ETN broke off that 62-yarder.
Carolina's
so that was good to
awesome
see.
At pass defense, so that's what it was important. Like, you got to do some stuff like that, so they just can't go all in on one thing.
It was C.J. Beathard last week for the Jaguars. I'm looking at recent tweets here. Ian Rappaport says that Doug Peterson tells reporters that Trevor Lawrence is dealing with a shoulder sprain, will be a limited participant today. He reports Lawrence is feeling better than he was.
Okay, that's
so
good.
We'll see.
I'd be shocked. I would expect him to play just because of who he is, but I don't know how severe that injury is. I don't have any inside info there. The magnitude of the game just lends me to believe that he'll try to do everything he can to be out there.
Seems likely.
Yeah.
Steelers at Ravens, death, taxes, and Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
Of course they're going to be in it. It was what? I feel like week 13 or 14 of every season dating back maybe to 2019. I don't even know.
It's when I start to go, please don't let the Pittsburgh Steelers be in the playoffs.
And that's exactly when they start making their run.
Right.
They are the ninth seed right now. But this year is so crazy in the postseason, too. I think I saw some scenarios where they can lose and move up into playoff position, depending on what else happens.
Is that right?
They can lose, yeah, right. Pete, have you seen that, too?
I guess
like
it would
Jacksonville
have to be...
loses, if Jacksonville loses, right, and then we have Indy playing Houston, and they have the tiebreaker maybe with, like, Buffalo, I guess?
I don't know how
that
works.
No, it wouldn't be Buffalo. It would be, yeah, a Jacksonville loss, a Denver win, and Indy-Houston does not end in a tie. Then no matter what Pittsburgh does,
wow,
they are in.
That's incredible. I did not know that.
It doesn't even seem mathematically possible.
No, it does not.
And Denver's, yeah. Well, who's Denver playing?
The Raiders. So I
oh, because that must be tiebreakers.
It has to be something like that.
Oh, my gosh.
That. Yeah, that's how deep or how far down it's
Steve
going.
Steve Kornacki's guy. He's like, he hasn't seen his friends and family for like 3 weeks because he's trying to figure all this stuff out for us. So Pittsburgh can clinch the wild card with a win, though, and all losses by Buffalo or Jacksonville. So there are multiple ways they can get in here.
Yeah.
They are playing the Ravens. Ravens might not have anything to play for.
Yeah.
And throw this in there. Week 5, they beat them when they did have everything to play for. 17-10 in one of the weirder games all year because George Pickens, 41-yard game-winning touchdown with a minute 23 left, was their first lead of the game, and they won one of those Pittsburgh Steelers-type games.
It was like, that was one of those games where you were like, oh my gosh, that's unreal. We've seen Tomlin and Pittsburgh do this before. And we've seen the Ravens do that a few times over the last few years where you're like, they are literally kicking the crap out of this team. And that was the game, the big drops, remember? That was the game, like, the Ravens dropped, like, I'm not even underestimating, probably 6 catches for about 180 yards, and probably 2 to 3 of them were touchdowns, right? So it's like the game should have been over with and done with. Mm-hmm. And as we know in the NFL, when you don't do that and take advantage of it, you're in trouble. Incredible what the Steelers are doing, right? I watched some of that film against the Seahawks a little. Mason Rudolph, everything they're doing there.
Yeah, what's going on there specifically?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the last two games they have averaged 32 points per game.
Yeah.
Bengals-Seahawks, not two world-beating defenses.
The worst defenses in football. So I think that's fair to say. We have to say that, right? Because there's a little too much out there where people are like, well, look what he's doing now. He should be the starting quarterback. And I want to go, you know, listen, he deserves a start. I get it. But he's been fortunate. Right, I think Kenny Pickett would look a lot better too if he got to play against the Bengals and the Seahawks, both horrible, you know, pass defenses and defenses in general. Right, but here's the thing: I think I would look at with Mason Rudolph. I think it's not that there's like a huge schematical difference. There's nothing like that. Where I think they're playing weaker defenses, we've saw them running the ball a little bit better lately. Ever since they fired Canada, they have tried to throw the ball down the field a little bit more. Mason Rudolph's a good down-the-field thrower. Mason Rudolph hangs in the pocket more than I think the other two quarterbacks do and lets things develop downfield too, right? To where he's not like, oh, the pass rush is getting on me. Let me just check it down. He's like, pass rush is getting on me, but I can pat it one more time and throw the deep one here, right? You know, there's value in that, of course, because they got some weapons to strike down the field. What also he does that way and you kind of seen this in both games, is once he hits you downfield a little bit, of course he softens coverages up. And in the fact that he's not so quick to check it down, and this is where you always get hear me going crazy about check down Charlies or conservative guys, right? Hey, you got a down the field concept. Okay, I know there's plays where you call it, and as you drop back, you go, oh, this coverage, we don't like this play against this coverage. Nothing's going to be open downfield. You still give it a chance, right? You still, the corner might play it wrong, right? Somebody might fall down, all right? So that's where he's been good. He gives it a chance every time, and then to the last possible second, he goes, okay, it's not there, and then he checks it down. But what he's done with checking it down now is – the defense got back because they were like, damn, he was sitting there and patting the ball and his eyes were down the field and his shoulders were tilted up. And we thought he was – we had to go back. We had to go back. So now he throws it underneath to Warren or some of the receiver, and all of a sudden they're running for a 20-yard gain. And it's because he's willing to stand in there and be a little patient with that. The other guys weren't like that, especially Pickett. Hmm. Pickett would have been drop back. Oh, we don't like this versus coverage. Let me just – as soon as I hit my last step in my drop, I'm going to check it down. But nobody's gotten down the field yet. So now you checked it down and you got 3 yards where you could have got 10 if you just let it develop, let alone there was plays, of course, with Pickett where you go, ah, I think you could throw that down there. You need to do that.
That's interesting.
That's what he's brought to the table.
So maybe there's more here with Mason Rudolph. Let's go inside the numbers powered by AWS. We'll take a look at the passing chart week 17.
I'm interested to see
this. Seattle, where his throws went to. Next Gen Stat says he completed all 9 of his passes targeting outbreaking routes for 149 yards. He completed 17.2 over expected passes and holds the 2 highest completion percentage over expected marks by a Steelers quarterback in a game this season.
Wow.
So, all right, for those of you that don't understand that stuff, and I don't know that I do after I just reading it,
yeah.
But basically some of these passes that he's completing, you know, an average quarterback and receiver combination would not be completing depending on where the defense is and how far of it is away from the line of scrimmage and all those different factors that Next Gen Stats somehow factors in. So he has been above average in all of those categories. And yeah, here's the passing chart too. And what does this tell you?
You know, this tells me that they have a formula going a little bit right now of like making you defend the whole field, even though it might be kind of ugliness in how they do it. But we know they're going to stay patient with the run game. And they're one of those teams like we talked about with like Miami a few minutes ago, like, right, where it just like adjusts. Like, hey, they're playing the Titans. They're going to let you throw an out route the whole game. Start throwing the out route. Don't just go, oh, all week I worked on this motion and this play, and I got to run it no matter what because this is what I did all week. No, sometimes they're just going, hey, we're letting you throw the ball here, throw the ball there. Pittsburgh is one of those teams that goes, you're going to let us throw the 10-yard out? Well, we'll just keep throwing the 10-yard out all day long until you stop it. Oh, 10-yard out, 10-yard out. That's what I do like about them, and that's what he will do. Right? So that to me is the thing they got working there is just that, yeah, run the ball, smash mouth concepts in between the tackle, people bunched in the box right in the middle trying to stop it. We have numbers advantages outside the hashes now when we drop back to pass because you got everybody in there to stop the run and do that. I think that's the big thing. And then the occasional, hey, shot down the field or whatever, and that's all she wrote. Mm. But you know, simple way of just going, hey, this is how you're going to have to defend the whole field against us. And with those 2 receivers they have on the outside, it ends up being in some big plays because of their talent.
And that was Inside the Numbers powered by AWS.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I love my cat, Tiger. And as my best friend, we speak our own language. What's that? You love your litter. He does, because I use Fresh Step Outstretch Litter. It absorbs 50% more waste and odor and requires less changing compared to Fresh Step Multicat. Less changing means more time playing. Right, Tiger? That's a yes. Find Fresh Step Outstretch Cat Litter in the pet aisle. Fresh Step is a registered trademark of the Clorox Pet Products Company. Certain trademarks used under license from the Procter & Gamble Company or its affiliates.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Despite all of this with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mason Rudolph looking better, doing some things outside the numbers, running the ball a little bit better, you still don't want to see them in the playoffs.
No, I don't. Okay. I don't. I mean, if they're in, you know, I'm like mad respect for them. No doubt about it. But, yeah, you know, as we sit here right now, I like the six teams that are in other than the Colts. I want Houston in at 7. Okay. And that's nothing personal. That's just purely for me watching football. Sorry, Colts fans or anybody out there. I won't be mad if the Colts get in. But, yeah, just C.J. Stroud and that story, I think, is cool for the AFC playoff picture.
Over in the NFC, the Green Bay Packers are currently in.
Boom.
We saw them win on Sunday Night Football. They are the 7 seed, although they don't have that locked up. They still have to win.
Yes, they do.
Their final game, Bears at Packers. They got to win to secure the wild card. They can clinch with losses by the Vikings, Seattle, and either the Bucks or Saints, but you don't want to worry about that. You want to get the victory against the Chicago Bears, which may be easier said than done. Week one, Green Bay did win. Jordan Love had 3 touchdowns, 38-20. I am guessing this is one of those games where week one, Packers beating the Bears has very little bearing on what will happen at Lambeau Field in week 18, in your mind.
Yeah, it will. I mean, you know, one, great job by the Packers the other night in our game, right? Who had looked like crap the 3 weeks before. So crap that I was like, even with Jaren Hall, I was like, I'm going to pick the Vikings. I just don't even trust Green Bay, right? So they played great on both sides of the ball. Kudos to them, right? And this last performance was more like the good streak we saw, you know, in early December, late November from the Green Bay Packers. But, like, let's be clear about this. Like, let's be clear. Chicago is one of the better teams in football right now. Oh. I mean, I told Florio today he had to do his PFT power rankings, right? And I was like, I would have Chicago in front of Tampa, Green Bay, I mean, I'm, you know, Seattle, some of these teams, New Orleans, I would. Now, first off, because we think Chicago, and you go, oh, yeah, it's not a great year. Why would you do that? And I go, well, they're one game behind all those teams I just mentioned. Yeah. It's one. I know they're out of the playoffs, but, you know, it's one game. It's not that big of a difference, let alone they've won 5 out of their last 7 and really could have won 7 out of their last 7. Lost a squeaker to the Browns, right? And lost to your Lions that we brought up a few times in Detroit where they controlled the football game.
Yeah.
Right? So they're playing awesome. They really are. This game's scary, right? I mean, the Bears, Fields playing awesome. They can run the ball. DJ Moore is a superstar, right? And their defense is one of my man-crush defenses because it's a little bit like the Browns. It's literally every play, like, we're in your fucking face. Go ahead, try to throw it deep. You're not getting anything short or easy. Bring it, right? That's where, like, when you ask me about guys that I think are important to this football game,
yep,
it's the Packers receivers. That's what I'd go to. Christian Watson, his health, where's he going to be, right? Because the Bears play man-to-man almost every play. They have literally, like, they're like the Browns where they just go, screw you, bump man-to-man, try it. Let's see what you got. And so they challenge everything. And a guy like Christian Watson would back them off a little bit. It would definitely make them think twice about being a little too aggressive. If he's not on the field for Green Bay, hey, Jaden Reed, who I know also is banged up, they're really good. But they're not the guys that always, like, instill fear in you, like, oh, my gosh, he could go for 80, right? Watson's the guy to do that in Green Bay.
Yeah.
They need him. But these receivers, yeah, this is going to be a big game for them to separate because I don't think they're going to be able to run in Chicago. Nobody's run in Chicago here the last 5 to 6 weeks.
Titletown fan 89.
Yeah.
His player to watch is Aaron Jones.
Yeah.
Can they run on Chicago?
Yeah.
I think it's clear the first 200-yard games this season in the Pack putting up 30-plus points in both games go hand-in-hand. Imagine getting Christian Watson, Wicks, Jaden Reed, Luke Musgrove back, too. I was trying to look
for
some news on Watson. Nothing really out there, so Who knows? We might not know for the next couple of days. But, yeah.
The Bears call your bluff. They call your bluff. So Aaron Jones, you know, he's not wrong. It might be more pass game oriented that he goes off in this one.
Sure.
Right? That's where I could see it going. The Bears basically go, they outnumber you in the run almost every play. The Bears have the number one run defense in football. Did you know that? Like most people, I don't think most people know that, right? That's they're real. And they're just not going to let you run, let alone they trust their corners. And, you know, they got Stevenson, the rookie from Miami, who's really good. And then they have a guy that I'm going to vote for as all pro and Jalen Johnson, a corner of the Bears. So they're like, bring it. They don't care. So, like, to your point, those receivers, that status, that group right there, to what our guy just said,
yeah,
you know, they need to be ready to go if they want to win this one. This is not going to be easy. Chicago has been competing, playing tough. Fields is playing tough. Chicago should not ruin anything here. Stay with Justin Fields, Matt Eberflus, Luke Getsy. The offense is awesome. The defense is playing great, and they got all these picks. Don't waste one on another quarterback. Stay with Justin Fields. Draft one more receiver. Get another pass rusher, right? You got the number one pick in a year where a lot of teams need a quarterback, and you don't really need one. You could come out of this draft going, we have three first-round picks and another two next year.
Yeah.
Right? Somebody wants Caleb Williams that bad? Okay, here you go. So they're sitting pretty. And I would stick with what they got, and I'm really impressed with Justin Fields. I really am.
It's a fierce debate with Justin Fields in Chicago. You see, I think it's like 50-50.
I've gone back and forth. So, I have, but I'm done. I know where I am now. I know that.
So you looked at him. You did a deeper dive. Here's his last six games. They've been awesome. You know, I mean, the pass yards, 200 yards per game, but completing 60% of his passes, three rush touchdowns, almost 400 yards on the ground, and that's what he brings you. He brings you that stuff.
Is. And but, like a Lamar Jackson, it's not about this overall number sometimes.
Sure.
It's like the point in the game, the situation he's been coming through. I didn't mean to cut you off. What were you going to say?
No, I was just about to go inside your notebook, brought to you by some random homie out there. We said whoever.
By Justin Fields.
Because
it's all positive. He wants to sponsor this one.
By It's Still Hines, because he shaved his head. Yeah. So, Justin Fields would sponsor this evaluation. So we're looking at Chris's cursive writing that we got late last night. And you say Fields is playing good, smart football. Nothing stupid, right?
Yeah,
is that what that
that's
says?
It. You got it.
What's the? Oh, I taking advantage of all that is possible. I guess you could read your own handwriting here probably better than I can.
Yeah, no, but I like this.
No bad decisions, no bad sacks, no unnecessary hits with a dash between un and necessary. Now, that is unnecessary.
It is, and I do it all the time for some reason.
Throwing is not pinpoint, but plenty good.
Right. Like last year, early this year, right? Remember at one point we had like all these people telling me, oh, the Bears coaches are doing a disservice to Justin Fields. And I'm like, as they were saying it, as they were talking to the highlights, people were open everywhere. And I'm going, what? Right? He didn't see the field well. They were afraid to call plays. You heard me saying that. That showed me they didn't trust him. Right? I would watch him a year ago, early this year, and go, two out of every three throws, I'd go, eh. He might have completed it, but the guy had to fall to the ground or whatever. Right? Now it's like every now and then I go, eh. It's like, oh, well, there's five good throws in a row. The sixth one, you go, eh. Okay, I can deal with that. Mm-hmm. That's fine. That's definitely above the line for being a damn good quarterback, let alone this ain't dink and dunk crap here, right? They are, like, as you saw in my notes, they throw the ball outside the numbers and down the fields. Passing game is downfield. Throw it outside a lot. He's staying in the pocket, letting plays develop, seeing the field really well. O-line, overpowering. Teams have to respect the run game. Then you got to worry about Fields running the ball. It's like a double whammy. The boots, the play actions, the screens, they're all good within this offense. They do a really good job there. Their system, they do a lot. I love it. You know. And then you saw the rest of my notes, just a few of the bullet points I wrote down there for him. Yeah. But, yeah, I'm impressed with the Bears. And the Bears have a chance here to go into the offseason, almost like your Lions did last year.
The similarities here, exactly.
Right.
At Lambeau,
yeah.
Last week of the year,
yeah.
They have nothing to play for, really.
Right.
The Packers have everything to play
for. Can ruin the year, make themselves feel better.
It's so similar.
Right. It's almost like a de facto, like, okay, we didn't get in the playoffs, but that was like the next best thing.
Yeah.
We didn't let the Packers in. And now we're going in the offseason with chest out, We built something. We got some culture here. And now we add a little sizzle through free agency in the draft. And watch out. And that's where I'm pumped for the Chicago Bears.
I can't wait to watch that game. That's going to be one of the games that I'm – what is it, 425? It's a 425
game? I think that's a 425
game.
One
there's
there,
so
yeah.
many 425. It's going to be hard for
we
us.
Got, we got – I think only – the good thing is we only have six at 1 o'clock.
That's true.
Okay. And then at 425, we have – Seven. So that's going to be brutal. That is going to be a lot.
You're going to be having like one eye on that while we're rehearsing. It's
well,
going to
I
be
mean,
a total
like
mess.
Broncos Raiders, I don't give a shit about. So I'm not watching that. Chiefs Chargers, I don't give a shit about that either. There's nothing that really matters. So those are games that I compartmentalize and just go, let me get a little feel, but I'm not going to watch, oh, second and seven with 7 minutes left in the first quarter. Eagles Giants, yeah, I don't imagine having to keep an eye on that too closely.
Yeah.
So there's a few that you just got to like, go, okay, I'm not going to go as much all in on those games, and I'm just going to, you know, get the Cliff Notes version.
What about Buccaneers at Panthers?
Yo, when's ho, that game? Yo, that game ho, is a, the Pirates' life for me.
Well, that's a 1 o'clock game. So we've got a 1 o'clock game here. Tampa, they lost last week against the Saints. We were in the room while watching it together. Our researcher, James Kaminsky, was going crazy. I was like, how much you put on this game? Buccaneers.
Seriously, we always know. We always know what game he bet on because he's going like some random thing he's going crazy about. Yeah. Like, why is he worried about Cole Kmet's receptions today?
Yeah. Yeah. Locked in on every play on Saints and Bucks. They can clinch the NFC South with a win. All they got to do is beat a two-win Panthers team. They played in Week 13, closer than maybe you would have thought. The Bucks only won by 3, 21-18. They pulled ahead in the third with a 75-yard touchdown, Baker Mayfield to Mike Evans, and never trailed after that.
Kind of when they just started to jumpstart their passing attack,
that's
really.
That's true. Yeah, you know? You're right.
It's when they got it going.
That might have been the play that did it.
Well, it definitely was part of it.
Who's your player to watch in this game?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to go with the running back and Rashee White. I am here. You know, listen, we know Carolina's offense is nothing special. I would think Tampa's defense could hang in there, okay? You heard me talk about before. It was a little bit like, you know, taking like what you saw with Jacksonville and Carolina last week. Carolina, if you get into we can only throw the ball, right, and we can't run the ball, you're going to be in trouble. They're really creative, right? They got talent in the secondary. They got good linebackers. Of course, they got Brian Burns and some guys that can annoy you pass rushing and doing that. That, to me, is when Carolina becomes a pain in the ass, is when they can play teams a little bit that are like, hey, we don't have to worry about their run that much, right? They're throwing the ball, and we're going to give them issues. When you're a little one, another team that I just go, yeah, they're one-dimensional, they're smart enough to kind of go all in on that area and stop that area that's not the dimension or however I'm trying to explain that.
Yeah.
But that to me, if they think they're going to drop back and throw the ball, then make big plays all game long, you know, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin and all that, they're going to be playing with fire. They got to run the ball. The running the ball will be the key to this one. Just, again, to not make it Baker sticking the ball into tight windows, keep a little pressure off their passing game.
You would prefer the Buccaneers make it, right? Because it's either them or it's the Saints or it's the Falcons who still have a chance.
Yeah, I would like to see that. You know, the Buccaneers have some playmakers on D. You know, Antoine Winfield is a guy that I look at to be, hey, he's kind of all-pro candidate for me at safety, right? They got some guys that can get after the passer a little bit, and then their offense is fun to watch. I think that's the reason I kind of look at them. And, yeah, I'd like to see them in the playoffs. And the Baker Mayfield story is always cool.
It could be a 9-8 Tampa Bay Buccaneers team hosting a 12-5 Philadelphia Eagles.
Isn't
How about
crazy?
That? That would be crazy. The Eagles could still win the NFC East, but it's not looking good. We'll get to the Eagles in a second. Cowboys at Commanders, because the Dallas Cowboys, all they got to do is beat the Commanders in Washington or have Philadelphia lose against the Giants. It's a rematch, a Week 12, and the Cowboys won by 35. Dak threw for 331 yards and 4 touchdowns. Nick DePanfilis. Mike McCarthy needs to call the right plays as the coach. Will he be the Achilles heel that dooms the Cowboys this year? Or is he the reason why they are there in the first place?
Yeah.
You've been very clear on what you think of the Cowboys offense.
Yeah.
Aggressive. You like that?
Yeah.
Simple. You don't like that.
No. Right. Should be plenty good, though, to win this game.
Yeah.
You know, this is a game where Like, I would go like Dan Quinn. This is on Dan Quinn. That's where they can lose the game. If they get a little too, oh, we're the Cowboys, we're in your face, we're going to get sacks, we're going to pressure the quarterback, we're going to play man-to-man. Like, if they do that against this crew, you better watch out. I mean, just like we saw the 49ers last week, right?
Yep.
49ers played man-to-man on a few snaps. Washington was like, thank God they're playing man. Hope, see you, Terry.
Yeah.
So that's where I think Dallas could get in trouble. Don't get too fixated on totally squashing their offense or increasing your sack numbers. What I'm saying is, you know, don't try to give the death blow in the first quarter. You know, just kill them slowly. You got to let them have a 10-yard completion every now and then. So what? But don't let it be, oh, no, McCorn got a 60-yard gain and now they're on the 5. Oh, Curtis Samuel was one-on-one and just got 70 yards and now they're on the 2, right? That, to me, is how you lose the game and it becomes an upset, as if they do shit like that. So that's where I would say just be careful. I would think their offense can, for the most part, move the ball on this Commanders defense throughout the football game. And, of course, Dak just can't play like he did last year when he was there in Washington. Last game of the year, he played really bad, if you remember. And they lost the last game of the regular season.
Oh, that's right.
Before they went to Tampa, you know, and beat the shit out of Tampa in the wild card round.
That's going
to
happen in one of these games. It's crazy, right? Carson Wentz with the Colts game where they had everything to play for. And what was it, Jacksonville?
Yeah, it was Jacksonville.
That had nothing to play for and beat them.
Yeah.
It's like, it's going to happen in one of these games. And you're like, how did that happen?
Definitely. You know, it's the guys that are playing, even though they're playing for nothing, they still like playing football. It's still their job. They still want to do good.
It's the last time they're going to do it in a long
time.
And
it's the last time you're doing it all year, right? And you do get motivated without pressure of going, let's fuck this team's year up, right? There's definitely that. So you can go out there and you just feel like, you know, hey, it's pressureless football, yet I'm loving it. I'm playing hard, right? And our coach is kind of, he doesn't give a shit either. He's taking a few chances in this one, right? So that's where that team has any advantage. And if they get a little hope or momentum, all of a sudden they start to feed off of it. And the other team starts to go, oh my gosh, they're playing us close. And they start to feel the pressure. And it all starts to go in different directions. And that's when that kind of crap happens right there.
Will your Giants do that against the Philadelphia Eagles?
We don't lay down for anybody.
So week 16, this is just a couple weeks ago, Eagles won, but it was closer than we thought because the game was 20-3, and then the Eagles fumbled a kickoff and then threw a pick six, and then you're like, oh my gosh, this is actually a ball game right now. Do you think the Giants could be that team for the Eagles?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But I do think the Eagles have a disease right now of letting anybody they play make the game closer than they should, right?
Yeah. Really almost all year.
The whole year, you know. It's one of those things of the year I'm proud of, that we were early on in the year going, hey, there's things about the Eagles to be scared of. There's things that don't look good. I know they're winning, but we were trying to say there's some issues that are concerning, right? So, yeah, I expect them to win this football game. But the Giants, Wink Martindale, I mean, he's never scared of anything. They're going to be aggressive on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, Daboll, creative, crappy Eagles defense right now. Tyrod throwing it good. Jalen Hyatt and Darius Slayton attacking downfield a little bit more. Like, I think they can make this game scarier than Philadelphia would like, but I certainly would think Philadelphia wins with, you know, the importance of the game, the importance of the situation overall. They need to just win and play well to feel good going into the playoffs. Because if they go in kind of the way they are right now as we sit here, they're going to go into that wild card game like, confidence is going to be about as low as it's ever been for Philadelphia and wondering, can we win? Can we really pull this together? You know, in a one-and-done situation, can we rise to the occasion? They're going to have a lot of self-doubt.
They've kind of pulled out all the stops already, right? They've had the players' meetings. Oh. They've had all this different stuff, and none of it's worked up to this point, which they get into the postseason, maybe, who knows? Maybe that's when they find the rhythm, and then you know what they'll say? No one believed in us. And I'll go, no, you guys didn't believe in yourself.
They got no rallying call right now.
Right?
And it does seem like there's some civil war going on there in Philadelphia. The offense, not as explosive and as dominant as we've seen it be. Defensively, right? It's all over the place. I mean, that was embarrassing. I watched that yesterday, too.
You did.
Watching Arizona. I mean, Arizona just put on a clinic of, like, pulling guards and pulling tackles. And, like, they ran for 200 yards, and I'm going to pull it up here. I don't know if there was a run ever past 20 yards, right? Mm. That's when you know you're getting your ass whooped. When you let up 200 yards rushing, and, all right, there was a 22-yard run. Because every run the whole game was, like, 8 yards, 6 yards, 8 yards, 10 yards, 8 yards, 6 yards. I mean, totally blown off the ball. Right, so Philadelphia physically on both sides of the ball not nearly as impressive, and like not nearly as creative on the offensive side of the ball to match some of the firepower they're seeing right now.
All right, so that is a preview of tomorrow's picks pods. You'll get all the picks tomorrow. That's when you get the picks.
That's when you get the picks.
Maybe you have an idea of where Chris is leaning, but you get the actual picks coming up tomorrow.
My best bets, I did pretty good last week. Like, I wasn't great, but I did pretty good.
Yeah.
I had the 49ers over Washington, right? I did that, and then I did...
did they cover? And they covered, right?
They covered.
Yeah.
And then my go-to for the last, like, 6 weeks has been the Bears, and they came through again. I thought the Bears would cover. And they did that. And I can't remember my third one.
Ravens, wasn't it?
I talked about maybe doing the Ravens, but I didn't do it. Hold on. I got it right here. I'm going to beat
Pete's searching too. Chicago Rams.
Oh, I took the Rams. And I was on the cusp so many times of them covering and them blowing them out.
That's the thing that's unfortunate. Didn't you have the Eagles week 16 against your Giants as like a best bet too? And so you were mad about the Giants making that one close?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't enjoy your Giants making these games close.
Yeah, right. I'm not doing that anymore.
Stop doing that.
Not picking against them.
All
again.
Right, so we have a lot of weeks to catch up here on the Big Butt Awards. And so Pete had a great idea.
Right.
We're going to do Jeopardy edition of the Big Butt Awards.
And you're going to ask me?
I'm going to ask you.
Oh,
you
no.
You got to figure it out.
Whose butt?
It is that time. Like big butts and we cannot lie. The Big Butt of the Week.
Oh.
Time to give some love to these big guys.
Some touches.
A couple sacks, forced fumble. He's a butting superstar.
Woo!
Give it to him, Ahmed. One butt cheap.
And this is why you're the big butt expert of the world right now.
Woo!
All right, so here we go. Week 14.
You're not going to be like, you're going to ask me, like, who has three dimples on their right cheek?
This man's big butt. This man's big butt plays defensive tackle.
Okay. This is week 14?
Week 14. Well, I'd say, but these are all season, like, quest. Like, this is up-to-date questions, but this is for a week 14. Yeah. Pete says it'll all make sense once we get going. This man's big butt plays defensive tackle. He tied an NFL record this season with 11 straight games with at least half a sack.
Madubuike.
Oh, yes,
Baltimore Ravens.
Yep, week 14, he was going against the Rams in that one. He had 12 sacks at that point. Third-round pick in 2020.
Yeah, Texas A&M.
We probably don't talk about him enough.
No, I would agree. You know, he's another guy that I think has probably entered the best defensive tackles in football conversation, right? And then just, like, not only stout against the run, but has that athletic ability to win one-on-ones inside that's kind of unique at his size. Damn good player. I think it's a contract year for him, too.
Ooh, wow.
Good year to have that.
Pete confirms that. First career Big Butt Award, so that's all you need right there. You go, I just won the Big Butt Award for the first time in my career. I'm peaking at the right time.
Give me $25 million a year.
The Big Butt at edge for week 14. This edge is currently the betting favorite for Defensive Player of the Year.
Gosh, well... I don't know. I'm going to say, I think it's T.J. Watt. Am I wrong
about
that?
It is not. Miles Garrett.
It is Miles Garrett? Wow.
Gave it to him in week 14 for his big performance versus the Jaguars. It was his third Big Butt of the Year award this season, so that should tell you right there.
Yes.
He was the top-graded PFF lineman for the week there, and Miles Garrett. Yeah, that surprises you, though.
Well, I don't know where the betting favorite was. That's where it was getting me, right? You know, again, and because I'm too skewed by, well, the betting favorite's going to go to the guy who has the most sacks. So I thought, you know, but maybe the public's being smarter, right?
Yeah.
Again, you know, I love Trey Hendrickson, and I love T.J. Watt. I do. But I don't see the effect on the game to the same capacity that Michael Parsons or Miles Garrett have.
Yep.
Just when I can't keep my eyes off of them when I'm watching them.
So there it is. Justin Madubuike and Miles Garrett, your big butts.
AFC North butts right there.
There they are.
Yeah.
Together at last, like they should be. Week 15.
Don't cross these out too quick. Let me answer, okay?
Week 15. Oh, don't reveal them too quick.
Well, he revealed the last one too quickly, but okay. I knew not to look.
Okay, all right. Week 15, defensive tackle. This 29-year-old defensive tackle was a free agent addition to a defense that now leads the NFL in yards and pass yards allowed.
Well, I'm going to say that's Chris Jones. No?
No. It is the Cleveland Browns.
Oh, my gosh. It's
free agent this year.
Yes.
Delvin Tomlinson. It was against the Chicago Bears.
I'm so stupid of me. I knew the Browns let in pass defense. I don't know what the hell I was thinking.
It's your man crushes. It's
Seriously.
Your men crush.
Yeah. What an idiot I am.
Signed that $57 million deal in March, which looks like a steal maybe at this point now. He had 5 pressures that week. He was the second highest graded defensive lineman to DeForest Buckner that week. All right, the edge for week 15. This edge rusher leads his team in sacks and quarterback hits. But we unfortunately now won't see him in the playoffs. Oh, his team's been eliminated.
It's an edge guy that leads in sacks and what else?
He leads in sacks, leads his team in sacks and quarterback hits. But unfortunately now we won't see him in the playoffs.
This isn't Trey Hendrickson here?
So it is not. It actually is a playoff team. We will not see him, though.
Oh, Bradley Chubb.
Bradley Chubb.
Oh, damn. Look at you guys playing with words
Sorry,
on there.
I even got screwed up on that one. I threw you off.
What an asshole you are.
That was his dominant performance against the Jets after kind of being the GOAT the previous week and then came back and played real well. That's a bummer.
Damn, that was a bummer. It really was.
I can't believe that he's out. So there it is, week 15. There's your trophy. Wow, look at Delvin.
Though. Yeah.
A man.
Didn't even show his butt. His butt's so big we couldn't put it on the screen.
Couldn't fit it in the screen. Week 16, defensive tackle. This former Alabama player was the number 2 defensive tackle in your draft rankings his year.
Gosh.
Who was number 2?
Hold on.
Oh, don't look.
I'm not looking.
Pete's revealed.
I know. Week 16 here. He was number 2 in my draft rankings.
Yep. This is Christmas weekend.
Christmas weekend. Gosh, this is killing me. Alabama. I mean, I know there's a lot of Alabama tackles. I'm all freaked out right now. Hold on a second. Give me a second. What else did you say about what he did that day? Anything else?
You want me to say who he played or no? With that game?
Yeah, tell me who he played for.
He played against the Denver Broncos.
He played against the Denver Broncos? Oh, so it was Barrymore.
Yes,
Damn.
You got it. Christian
Damn.
Barrymore led all defensive tackles with 3 sacks.
Woo.
He was by Levi Onwuzurike for you that year.
Yeah.
My Detroit Lions.
Yep.
So
Barrymore's a player, man.
The edge for that week, this third-year former backup now starts as the bookend to a Pro Bowler with 13.5 sacks this season.
This third-year former backup now starts as a bookend to a Pro Bowler with 13.5 sacks. Damn, there's a lot of language in that thing there.
So he plays on the same line with a guy who's got 13.5 sacks and is a Pro Bowler. He's a former – this other guy is a former backup, third-year player.
Oh, and this is – What week is this? Is this Christmas week?
Week 16, yep.
You're going Kuntz?
There it is, Malcolm Kuntz.
Yep.
He had 9 pressures, 3 sacks, both a career high for him.
It takes me 5 minutes just to figure out what the hell the question is. I'm like, got 7 different wrinkles on there. This former backup's across from a Pro Bowler that won't be playing this weekend, but the team will be in the playoffs, but he won't be in the playoffs.
He's not a playoff player, but he is in a playoff team. First 35 career games for Kuntz, he had 4 sacks, 11 quarterback hits. In his last 3 games, 5 sacks and 7 quarterbacks. He's had a whole career in his last 3 games. So congratulations, Malcolm Kuntz. Congratulations, Christian Barrymore. You are the big butt players of the week. Look at that for Kuntz, just dominating his own player and Patrick Mahomes.
That really is. That's a great, great picture right there.
Well done, Kristen, finding that one. All right, week 17. So we'll get all caught up here. This defensive tackle leads all rookies with 9 sacks this season.
Well, I think you brought him up earlier. It's Kobe Turner, right?
Kobe Turner.
Yeah.
Against your Giants, Los Angeles Rams.
Yep. Hell of a player. I mean, talk about another mid-round pick by the Rams that contributes to their football. What's he's
third-round pick out of Wake Forest.
Wake Forest. Okay, that's what I thought. I couldn't spit it out there.
Yep.
But, yeah, damn. I mean, another gem they found in the middle rounds. Yeah,
I know. Pete wants to know why Les Snead hates draft picks so much. He's really good at them. But maybe this is why, right? He's like, I don't need a first-rounder.
I don't need those first-rounded overrated ones.
I'll find a good defensive tackle in the third round. All right, and our last one,
Edge. Despite having just 9.5 sacks this season, this Edge is third in the NFL with 92 quarterback pressures per PFF. Wow, he's getting to the quarterback, not necessarily sacking the quarterback, but he's always around him.
Well, this is I would have thought it would have been like Micah Parsons, but he's got more than 9 sacks, right? I'm looking at the teams here.
Yeah.
Hold on one more second. Let me just read. 9.5 sacks. That is third in the... Oh, my God. I think this is Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah, exactly right.
Booyah.
My Aiden Hutchinson against the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
His third career big
butt. I think
I
heard that during
the
telecast. I think they said that, actually.
He also, in this game, tripped a guy and got it called on the Cowboys instead. So, I mean, that's
how good
really
he is.
Good. That's
he can
really
mind trick the referee to go, no, it's the other team.
Yeah, I like that. I like
that is
that play
amazing.
A lot.
There really is.
I can't believe that happened.
I know.
By the way, Nick Bosa, second in quarterback pressures, also has just 10.5 sacks.
All right, and then who's first?
Micah is first.
See? So it's not all about the sacks, right? Mm-hmm. When people play like the 49ers or the Cowboys too, you know, that's the other thing you got to think about. You know, your whole week as a quarterback, they're literally going, don't hold the ball too long, don't hold the ball too long, don't hold the ball too long, don't hold the ball. So literally, you know, their effect on the game, they might be getting the sacks, they're getting pressures, and they're making the quarterback probably a handful of times every game throw the ball, and you go, he could have held on to that a little longer. That guy's about to come open. Mm-hmm. But they're going the whole week what they've been told, and they've been hit once or twice by the guy already, and they have a gauge in their head that they just don't feel comfortable with,
didn't
and that's
time.
A great effect. And I love stuff like that.
So congratulations to rookie Kobe Turner and my guy Aiden Hutchinson. Kobe Turner, that's a solid.
That is a solid butt right
behind.
There. Yeah,
good
solid
job,
behind.
Good job. All right, well, we're all caught up.
Okay.
And now all that's left to do is to bury some teams. They're already dead. I was going to say kill them.
Yeah.
You don't have to kill them.
You already killed them. They're dead.
We already killed them.
Right.
We're also tracking your homie
but
playoff
damn,
predictions.
I don't know. What's better, to kill them or to dig the hole for them? I don't know. I mean, digging them, killing them might be the easier part. Digging the hole is harder.
I wouldn't know exactly, but you're right.
You know, I look at like Goodfellas. The guy just shot him in the head, and he's dead. That was easy. When they had to go dig the hole, that was work.
It's emotionally hard, though. Emotionally hard to actually do the killing. Easier emotionally just to dig a hole. So we had 1,000 of you guys submit your playoff predictions. 53 homies could still correctly predict all 8 division winners, including this homie right here.
Wow.
I am one of the guys. It's
that
still
can get
alive.
All 8 division
all
winners.
All 8 division winners.
Congratulations.
Wild card, I just did, was a disaster. But the division winners, I actually could do that. Yeah, I had the Patriots getting in as a wild card. Dolphins, Jags, Eagles, Saints.
Okay.
For me to be correct.
Dolphins,
ooh, Saints.
Jags, Eagles, Saints.
That's a tough one.
You got some tough ones there. You might not be standing that pretty. Yeah, Eagles.
Dolphins, I feel like. Jags, I feel like.
You
Eagles,
could be
no.
missing all of those.
I could, I could end up with 4 after it's all said and done. Chiefs, 92% of you had them winning the AFC West, including you, me, and Pete. Ravens, 78% had missing the playoffs. Oh, making. That is making. Okay. So, okay, Pete says that was a mistake. Making the playoffs, 41% had winning the division. All right.
Still Hines, did you have the Ravens making the playoffs at least?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh. We should look through those. We should see if he even participated. So now it is time. Let me pull up my my poems right here as we lay these teams to rest. We'll start with the Las Vegas Raiders. Las Vegas Raiders, 98% of all of us had them missing the playoffs. So we were, except for 2% of us, were exactly right. Their quarterback looked like a movie star, but too many of his throws were just bizarre. This year was so bad, it made Raider fans wish they had one more year with Derek Carr. That's how bad it was. You're like, God.
Well done.
I was like, we wanted to go back to that guy?
Damn.
Yeah, it would have been better. All right. The Broncos, 95% of all of us had them missing the playoffs, and they did exactly that. Their fans proudly wear their team-colored jacket, even though they're not in the postseason bracket. Peyton thinks he's like Andy or Bill, but maybe a better comparison still is maybe a slightly better Nathaniel Hackett.
Whoa!
1 or 2 games.
Shots fired. How dare you?
Better.
How dare you? Damn.
The Bears, they missed the playoffs. 9% of the homies had them making the playoffs. And who knows? If the season went a couple more weeks, like it will in probably 2027 or something like that, they would have maybe made it. Bears, here we go. This one pains me, you know.
I'm sure.
Their season was certainly not a bore.
They gave their fans a whole lot more. They aren't afraid of a collision, and next year in the division, they could definitely finish top four. They really could. I think they have a good chance next year.
How dare he talk about you like this, Bear? I'm going to become a Bears fan just to go against you.
I kind of became a Bears fan.
I might adopt the Bears to be my second favorite team in football next year, just to make the Lions-Bears thing a thing here.
Well, your favorite team in football is done. Giants are out.
Better be careful here.
70% of the homies out there had them missing the playoffs, even though they were a playoff team.
Me. I think I had him missing too.
No one believed it.
Be careful here. I know some people that can dig some holes around here. Okay, you better watch out.
You had him making the playoffs.
Oh, did I? Damn it!
Along with Pete, your fandom. You picked with your heart, not your head.
I had him making the playoffs.
You did. Wow. You had my Lions missing it and the Giants making it.
Gosh, damn! I can't even believe that. I'm like shocked that I did that.
The New York Giants. Their season was under assault, rather quickly put to a halt. Brian Daboll said, quote, "I don't want to gloat, but honestly, none of it was my fault." You know, because Brian Daboll, that's what I think it says. Daniel Jones, it's Tyrod Taylor. Maybe that hit a little close to home.
Yeah, he hasn't been doing that. I think he heard
that. I think that is a good point.
I think he heard enough people in football and the media go, "You got to stop showing up people on your sideline," right?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a no-no. And I think he did it one too many times, and he made the adjustment. He's a man's man. He knew it wasn't right either.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. He's learned. Lessons learned.
Lessons
as
learned.
We pay them to
Oh, he took it easy
respects.
On them. That was good.
The Chargers are out. 57% of the homies had them making the playoffs, including Pete, believed that Brandon Staley was going to turn it around. Now he's just watching from a Caribbean island somewhere. Here lie the Los Angeles Chargers. What team are we talking about? Let's just say the season.
They're so bad that we can't even. You just, it's like when they just come up, dysfunction goes into the brain.
Let's just say the season was not great. It was a lot for their fans to tolerate. Brandon Staley, taken by the man above. He died doing what he loved, going for it on fourth down and eight. You know, that's what he did. You know, it's just. He died doing what he loved.
You butchered that one just like he did in a clutch situation in a football game.
Maybe this is too many poems in a row for me. All right, one final one to do here.
Okay.
The Cincinnati Bengals, 93% of us had them making the playoffs, including you, me, and Pete.
Yep.
35% had them making the AFC Championship game. 13% had them winning it all.
Wow.
Fourth most in the NFL. So we were all wrong on the Cincinnati Bengals, but we did not know that Joe Burrow was going to be injured. So.
Kind of a big deal.
All right, so here we go. Final one. A season that left their fans frowning. A champion they will not be crowning. The backup QB at times peaked, but under pressure he freaked, and his pants ended up showing some browning.
Whoa! That's about as dirty as you've ever gotten in one of these.
Literally, figuratively, as dirty.
I'm impressed there. Wow. One of these days you can actually swear on this thing?
I think, yeah. Actually, who knows? Who knows? It could happen. Anything could happen. We go.
Well, how long does it take you to write each one of those?
I'm getting better. I'm actually pretty fast. I think all of those took me maybe 40 minutes, something like that.
Okay, you're ripping them up.
Because you got to think of what's the roast of each team?
Yeah,
What's
the two or three punchlines to kind of hit on, and then you just frame it around that?
Work backwards from there.
Yeah, so. Okay. All right, well done. I think for next week's teams in the playoffs, I mean, teams that are not, you lay them to rest, right? We'll dig the hole.
Right.
Also, whoever loses the national championship game, maybe you better do that. Because I'd love to, if it's Michigan, I'd love to hear you put them to rest. I'd love to hear that.
If Michigan loses, I will lay them to rest.
I am really excited. I'm a casual college football fan, right? You know, I watch the big games on Saturday. I love it, but I just, I got to be a dad and all that too. I got to announce two games this year in college football. One was Michigan, the other one was Washington.
You're right.
I got to see them up close and person.
To talk to their guys.
I did.
Did you talk to Michael Penix?
I didn't get to talk to Michael Penix. No.
Why not?
They didn't let him talk to us. It was kind of a thing in the Pac-12 this year. It was like Penix and Caleb Williams were not made available to the TV crews, which I want to be like, what? They pay you how many billions and we can't have your best player?
Yeah.
Like that shouldn't be allowed.
That's
so they got to figure that out. But either way, I mean, totally two impressive football teams that I'm excited to watch that.
Who do you think is going to win then?
Man, I think it's going to be really close. I really do. I feel like I'm leaning Michigan. I am. But Oof, it's hard. I got to think about it more. Penix and that offense, I don't know. I haven't feel like I haven't seen anybody really slow them down the whole year.
Yeah.
And he threw the ball great the other night. So that'll be fun to watch down in Houston.
Michigan, a 4.5-point favorite. Yeah. I feel like Michigan's defense could make things really hard on Washington.
I would think so, too. I don't think Washington's played anything remotely like this defense this year. So that would be something to watch for sure. Yeah, I think I'd probably go with Michigan if you made me bet money.
All right, I may be wearing this again on Monday.
All right, please do. We like it. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoyed it. Tomorrow I got the Week 18 picks with Florio. Please check us out there. We'll break down the games even further. It's always a good listen. We have a lot of fun. We swear a lot, so that's always good, too. A lot more swears on that one than this one.
Yes.
Especially because we have two hosts that swear on that one, only one on this one.
He just lets it fly now.
He lets it fly. Right.
He's like, if Chris can do it, I want to do
it. Well, and that, now it's literally like he'll say shit four times in the first 20 minutes, and then I'll break out one like an hour later and be like, whoa. He'll go, whoa, 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 whoa. And I would be like, Mike, you said the same word seven times in the first segment.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, you know where to find us. Keep sending the questions. We appreciate all the homies chiming in, you partaking and being a part of this podcast. We really do appreciate that. Ahmed, you the man. Thanks for wearing your Michigan colors. Mm-hmm. Screw you.
Yep.
All right. All right, everybody. Peace out. Have a good rest of your week. Enjoy the Week 18 games. Check us out tomorrow with Florio. Clap it up.
Clap it up.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.